Welcome to the Be Here Now Network guest podcast. This series features talks from a myriad of modern spiritual teachers expanding on how we can all live a life in balance. If you're interested in supporting this podcast, please go to BeHereNowNetwork.com/guest.
These retreats can be thought of as a journey. It's an unusual journey because it's a journey that's traveled by being more and more in the same place. To really be here in a full way. And it's a journey of discovery of what is here in you, in fuller and fuller ways. Many times discovering aspects of ourselves that are unknown. It's a journey of being more and more willing to be here, interested in being really here, as opposed to interested in things that are in other places and other times. Sometimes it's a journey of surrendering to here, because any alternative is too difficult. It's a journey of letting go into here. So it's a journey that goes nowhere, but in the process we're changed. And so it can be, it's kind of a journey, and and some of this journey sometimes can be seen in the theme we're doing now, the liberative dependent arising. A series of conditions that support the movement towards letting go, to the release of clinging. And if you come across yourself clinging to something, attached, holding onto something strongly, or weakly even, that you can't quite let go of, then it's useful to think of these steps of liberative dependent arising as some of the conditions that are useful to have in place to help you let go. Letting go, you know, especially the deepest letting go that's helpful to do, is not easy to do. And so we kind of prepare ourselves for that possibility and create the optimal kind of mind and heart and body that sets the stage for being able to first see that deep holding we have and then also to release it. And it's a journey to become free of our suffering. It's considered to be a noble journey and a noble cause to become free of dukkha. So today the topic is samadhi. And I think of it as the last of the preparatory conditions, because tomorrow we'll start with the insight part of the journey. So tomorrow is seeing things as they are, and we'll actually have 2 days on that topic because it's so important. It's the insight of insight meditation that we'll explore. But all the steps before that are kind of the preparation for having insight. So we have the suffering and faith and gladness, happiness, tranquility, joy. So gladness, joy, tranquility, happiness, and now samadhi. And so these insights that we're leading up to, they're not meant to be beliefs, like you have to read a book or hear a Dharma talk and not believe them, but they're actually something that are revealed, that are shown. And it's good to be prepared to see these things. And so we create the stability, create some degree of well-being and some degree of confidence, the opposite of the three characteristics. And these first steps of dependent arising are putting in place these conditions of fair degree of stability, if you know, appropriate degree, hopefully, of well-being, and a degree of confidence in oneself, in the path, faith. And how much we need to have is up to each individual person, but even just a little bit moves the journey along and supports it. And so all these are, in samadhi, is the last of the preparatory ones, is a condition we put in place so that we can have these insights in a deep, deep way. And not only so we can have the insights, but so those insights that we have can change us. We can be changed by them in useful ways. Because if we're all tight and hard and attached to things, it's not easy to allow things to soften us or release us or free us. And so part of the first steps of preparations is to create a state of mind, a state of heart, a state of being that's malleable, workable, changeable, soft enough to kind of let something open up in a deeper and deeper way. And this idea of preparation, I think, is kind of nice, or at least I think it's nice, because when we go to some place that's sacred, something that's very, very special, it's kind of common that we prepare ourselves. And sometimes you go to sacred sites, and you don't just kind of, you know, drive your car, screech up to the front door, and just, you know, dash in, and... You know, you like here you park way down at the bottom of the hill and you walk up the hill past the gate and further up the steep hill and then you have to make this right turn and you come into this big courtyard where there's a nice kind of pool and into this hallway with the glass doors and finally you come in here. And this is a special place. We would all feel kind of uncomfortable if someone's screeched up to the door. You know, it wouldn't be the preparation. We're not being changed or softened or prepared for it. So there's something about going into a sacred space that people often, humans often get prepared and ready for it. And I think that getting ready for insight, I think of insight as stepping into a sacred world of seeing, and that we want to prepare ourselves. It's very different than how some people are when they first hear about, you know, insight, of insight meditation, and there's an acquisitive sense, in a hurry, spiritual materialism, get this as quickly as I can. But to kind of be a certain kind of healthy humility approach. When I went to practice in Japan, in the monasteries in Japan, the first thing that you had to do when you came to the monastery to ask permission to get in is I had to stand at the outside the monastery at the gate. And I just stand there and wait. None of the screeching up to the door and tumbling out and announcing that I'm here. Where's my room? It was like, you know, I had to stand at the gate and wait, and wait, then wait, then wait. And finally someone came out and checked me out and asked me a Dharma question to kind of make sure that I was, you know, ready to come into the monastery. So I passed the Dharma question just enough to be able to be invited into the front entry hall, and just off to the side there was a kind of a waiting room, and I was invited to sit in that waiting room. There was this, you know, zafu. And I was invited to sit there, and kind of until they came and got me again. So I had to wait and wait. And this time the waiting took 7 days of sitting there, waiting. And I got to go eat, I got to go sleep and go to the bathroom and stuff. And it was, you know, this kind of preparing and making sure you're ready and kind of this... You know, certain kind of, I think they were looking for a certain kind of humbleness rather than some kind of arrogance about coming into the sacred world of practice that they had to offer. So we're preparing ourselves. And then we come to this topic of samadhi. And samadhi is, a very powerful word. I think it's a powerful word in much of Indian religious traditions. Some Indian traditions hold up the word samadhi like the Buddhists would hold up the word nibbana or nirvana. It's like that's almost synonymous. It's a very important word. And I think of samadhi, I want to use that word samadhi rather than the English, you know, the C word that I want to use tonight. And partly to kind of, because it's really a special thing, something to honor and have respect for, some kind of reverence for, and not to be acquisitive or demanding. And I think samadhi is a gift. So samadhi, one of the meanings of samadhi is to gather together, to unify. And it's associated with being at home, coming home. And the idea of a home is a place where you feel safe, where you feel accepted, and you can really be yourself. You don't have to try to be someone else, and you can be yourself, and you can, you know, you can maybe fart, and it's okay, or some other unusual thing. You know, it's just safe, it's comfortable, very comfortable. And some people, of course, don't have a house or a home where they have that, but that's the kind of the idea of it. By the time I was 18, I had lived in 12 different homes, and three of them were without my family, in four different countries. So the idea of a home, a literal home, to find this homeness was not, you know, a reference for me. But I had other references for it. And one reference was being in bed. I'm Norwegian, and Norwegians have comforters. And so this being this comforter was so nice. You know, it was a place where I felt so safe and cozy and home. And it was kind of formative for me to have that, whatever feeling I had in that kind of laying there. I have found a deep sense of at-homeness that became a reference for me on the bus, public bus, going home from school. There was something about sitting on that bus. I just would go into this place of feeling so safe and connected and accepted, and like I belonged in the world. Or when I went back, because I moved so much, my grandparents' house was my stable base. We'd go there periodically, and my grandmother, there was a formative experience that I didn't know was formative until I was an adult. I took it for granted. I didn't think about it. I just didn't even know what was going on, how it was affecting my heart, but I. This is, you know, in Norway, and this kind of beautiful, not beautiful, but kind of rustic wooden room with a wooden bed. Everything was wooden. And this beautiful morning light coming in through the window. And I don't know how old I was, but a little kid, I could read. And I'd be in the comforter, under the comforter. And I'd be reading the Donald Duck magazines. And my grandmother would come in and bring me toast with cheese. And when I was an adult, at some point I realized that that was formative. The sense of love and home and safety that I had just from the, you know, her bringing that in. I had no idea at the time that that meant anything. But in fact, it meant a lot. So one of the things that happened for me is I started practicing and meditating. These references I had for home, for safety, for being accepted or being at ease in my being, kind of got reawakened or remembered. And the memory of them was actually part of the process of discovering a homeness here in myself. And I think that's kind of the goal of practice, is to discover how to be at home here in a deep way and to carry it with you wherever you go. And so I think of, for me, I associate samadhi with that movement. If samadhi is practiced in a way that is holistic and integrated and has the qualities of being relaxed and spacious and, you know, inclusive of not only ourselves, but inclusive, seemingly inclusive of everything itself, in this wonderful sphere of samadhi. So samadhi is a gathering in, a gathering together, in the sense that all the different parts of us are working together. They're not, they're the desperate parts of ourselves are not kind of at odds with themselves, or we're not in conflict with ourselves, or we're not going in cross purposes to ourselves. And so there's kind of a gathering together, being really here with all of us. And something that, when I think of this, I have this wonderful event where one of my great teachers in recent years was my son's preschool teacher. And he was such a wise man, and I used to love going into the preschool and just see what wisdom he had today. It was great. One of the great, really great experiences of tranquility and that you can experience is to go into a preschool when all the kids are napping. That's exquisite. But sometimes I would go in, and it was chaos. And then the teacher, the way that he would, when it was time to change what they were doing, you know, they were doing the time to stop playing and have snack or do something. He would stand in the middle of the floor, this big playroom, and stand up tall. He was kind of a big guy. And he'd stand up tall, and he would start whispering. I don't know what he whispered, but he would start whispering, like, it's time for stories. You come here, I'll tell you the story, and come here and sit down. And he would just stand there, very stable and strong, and just whisper in a gentle way, loving way to these kids. And the kids would be like the Pied Piper. They would just, you know, they would come and sit down around him. And he didn't have to yell, you know, sit down, you know. Stop what you're doing. He's whispered. And so the idea of gathering together this kind, loving way to ourselves, come here, come here. Your thoughts wander off. Come back, come here. Whisper to it kindly. Come here, be here. It's okay now. Come back. Your energies are bouncing off the walls in here. Come back, be here. Kind of gathering together. Come here, be all together, all the parts of you. All the parts are included here. And to have this kind of inclusive presence, being of samadhi, it's supported by all the earlier steps in the liberative dependent arising. In fact, the one immediately preceding it is happiness. And that's a big clue about how to experience samadhi. That there has to be some modicum of, and the one before that is tranquility. So some modicum of relaxation and well-being for samadhi to be holistic, samadhi to be a useful, healthy samadhi. I've known people who neglected that part of the path, and you know, it's possible to get concentrated with an act of will. It's possible to get concentrated not only with an act of will, but with greed, with even aversion, and all kinds of unskillful, unhelpful states of mind. And but it's not a useful concentration. It's not a useful samadhi. And it can be brittle, and actually it can be a lot of tension that can build up and pressure, and sometimes kind of this the energetic pressure and tension that builds up can lead to other kind of unfortunate kind of consequences where people get a little imbalanced perhaps, or unstable or fragile in some ways. But if we can stay soft, relaxed, and some well-being, I don't want to say happy, that maybe seems like too high a bar, but some sense of well-being, then it's easier to settle into samadhi. And one thing to understand about samadhi is that it's a state of being. It's not a one-pointed focus. It's not like a singular mental factor that we have to kind of engage like a laser. We open the control tower and we're like zeroing in as a laser. Certainly focus is part of it, but it's a state of being. Samadhis are states and not just a simple mental functioning. And so to allow yourself to settle into a state that's broad, expansive, or settled, or relaxed, unified, it helps to be relaxed. It helps to have some well-being. It helps to have faith. It helps to have some modicum of stability. And it helps to be mindful. In fact, these steps of liberative dependent arising are meant to accompany the practice of mindfulness all along, being mindful of what's going on. And part of mindfulness is we start noticing where we're attached, where we feel stuck, we start noticing how we're tense, start noticing how we have preoccupations and concerns, and then we're trying to learn to, with the mindfulness, to have a wise relationship to those things, and to find a way to not be in conflict with anything at all. Part of the function of mindfulness is to find a way to live kind of at peace or conflict-free with whatever arises for us, whether it's within us or outside of us. And certainly to try to kind of heal some of the wars that can exist inside of us, where, you know, one part of us doesn't accept the other part of us, and, you know, they don't talk to each other perhaps. If they do, it's kind of in a rough way. And so mindfulness is to see all this and kind of, you know, recognize it and perhaps meet it with kindness, meet it with friendliness, and so that the different parties are willing to sit down at the table and talk, and get to know each other, find out what's going on. So mindfulness is important with this whole process. And as we get to know each other and the conflicts and the tensions begin to settle, then it's kind of more and more natural that we begin to settle into here. Remember, the journey is to end up here and to kind of start feeling like here is a more interesting place to be than there. That here and now is more interesting than there and then. That here, and part of this movement of mindfulness and samadhi is a clarifying of our interest. Because if you sit down and try to focus on your breathing, for example, but you find it hard to do because your mind is thinking about all kinds of things, part of you is more interested in the thoughts. You think you're interested in the breath, but something's more interested in whatever you're concerned with. And so it takes a while to kind of clarify what is really interesting, what's really important, what's valuable to focus your attention on. And it's a big job to convince the mind that it's more interesting to be in the present moment, here in the immediate details of the breath, of the body, of the heart, the mind, to really be here as opposed to there and then, opposed to these thoughts and ideas and distractions. And that's part of mindfulness, the practice, is to learn about that, to learn why it's more interesting to be here, to recognize that some of our interests that we have are maybe not that interesting after all. And maybe some of you are like me, that sometimes you have to be lost in particular fantasies for a few days, weeks, or years, before it finally dawns on you, you know, this is getting old. This is no longer so interesting. And then finally, well, what's more interesting? You look around and say, well, what about the lived experience? What about right here, now? And so there's kind of clarifying of interest, so we're being able to be here. And so there's a settling into here, and this gathering together into here, here. And then as we're more and more here and feel more whole, feel more connected to ourselves, then samadhi begins to arise. The word that I like, the English word that I like to use for translating samadhi is composure. And a little bit I get away with it because the etymology of samadhi is the same etymology of the word composure. Sam is like with, and the D part of samadhi means to pose or to stand. So this idea of composure. And I like composure because it doesn't have the connotations of the control tower and the laser. Composure for me, when you compose yourself, is something you do with your whole body. You know, someone says, you know, you should compose yourself and maybe sit up straight and take a deep breath and relax. And then also for me, the idea of composure is you compose yourself around the experience. So rather than doing that unnameable word, we compose ourselves on the breathing. So what does it mean to get composed? So that, you know, the attention, the body, even emotionally, we're kind of settling around the experience we're focusing on, to be composed, to be settled. And then at some point, we're composed enough and settled enough and interested enough to be here that the interest in the hindrances no longer operate. The interest in our desires, the interest in our resentments and our aversions and hurts, the interest in our restlessness and our sleepiness and our doubt kind of abates, and the energy that goes into it abates, and it becomes easier and easier just to be here. And the interest is easier to have right here because the pull is not going on, not there. And so then it's easier and easier to kind of stay present. And the image I have for being present, being kind of focused and engaged, is that of a boat, the bow of the boat, cutting through the water. The tip of the bow kind of pushes the water to its side, and the water just washes off the side of the boat and, you know, keeps going, and the boat doesn't, it's not stopped by it. So we keep, at some point we're able to keep our focus on the breathing or the metta or the experiences of the present moment, and the thoughts and all kinds of things might arise, sounds might arise, but they don't grab us, they don't grab our interest. They kind of wash off the side of the boat, and we keep going. If it's big seas and big waves, then, we have to deal with the big waves and find our way. But if the water is really still and quiet, then that boat just cuts through smooth and easy, right? You're pointing towards the harbor. It just can go straight into the harbor. All the water doesn't interfere with it. It just washes off the hull. So at some point we have the ability to be focused. And that focus, we stay there. Distracted thoughts might arise. We let go of them. We let them fall away. We come back. We kind of keep the focus on the harbor, the safe harbor where we're going. And so come back. And we stay. It becomes more interesting to keep the focus on the safety of the harbor we're going to, you know, focusing on the breath, focusing on, than it is to be involved in anything else. It's more interesting, it's more engaging, it's more meaningful in a sense. And so that kind of beginning, that also begins to gather together more and more of this, all the different energies and activities and mental functionings of ours, all kind of gather for this purpose of kind of it going towards that safe harbor. And I use the word safe for like a harbor because samadhi is a state of that feels very like great safety. There's phenomenal degree of safety to be found in states of samadhi. Just feel safe. We're protected in so many different things. And we're going to have this soft, relaxed, peaceful, spacious qualities of mind that come with samadhi, a healthy samadhi. And then there are these different mental functions that come into play that support the deepening of this samadhi. And the two that are often paired together are sometimes in Pali called vitakka and vichara. And the initial kind of application of attention and the sustained attention. So if I want to polish this big bell here, I would get a cloth. And I wouldn't, if I put the cloth on the bell, that's not going to do much good to polishing it. I have to kind of touch the bell with the cloth, and then I have to rub it. So the touching of bringing the cloth to the bell is the initial application of mind. And then the rubbing it is sustaining it, being there with it. And some people are really good at the first, but it never occurred to do the second. They bring their mind back, and sometimes it's a dutiful approach to mindfulness. So, okay, I'm supposed to be present, I'll come back. And so, you know, and as soon as we're back, I've done what I'm supposed to do, so then, you know, then I can stop paying attention, and the mind wanders off. I call it the checklist approach to mindfulness. You know, done that, and, you know, don't pay any more attention. But the idea is to really go in there and be there and feel it, and, you know, what is this? Get to know it, or sustain the attention there. And this works both for, you know, straight samadhi practice where you stay on one object and only one object, like the breathing, where you really sustain, hang out there with it. It also works with kind of more choiceless awareness forms of vipassana where you have changing objects in the present moment, but you take your time with each one. You know, you want to connect to it, and then while it's there for a while, you want to sustain the attention and be with it. And there's, you know, that sense of staying and being and going deeper into it, sinking into it perhaps, or riding on it. One of the classic images for these two is that of a bird taking off in flight from the ground. The initial application is to kind of flap the wings, and then once it's flying and soaring, that's the sustained attention. Or I think of it like surfing. Like you have to swim to catch the wave, and then once the wave's caught you, then you have to just kind of, you know, ride the wave. Or if you don't like surfing, the scooter. You know, you have to, you know, you push the scooter and then you stay on it, so it glides you for a while, and you push it, glides for a while. So you do this kind of connect to the breathing, and you glide on it, you ride it as long as you can. And then maybe you have to do it again. Ride it like that. And then if you allow me, the one of my favorite images was vitakka vichara is petting a cat. You know, simply putting your hand on the cat it doesn't go over very well on the cat. So the initial contact, you know, has to be some follow through. So this, you know, the petting the cat, so you contact the cat, that's the initial, and then you pet it, and you stay with it, and after a while, the cat begins to purr. After a while, if we can stay in this kind of stay with something, keep coming back and kind of working the breath, working the present moment, staying with it, come back, be there, stay, and letting distractions go, letting all the other forces go, and just kind of settle in the simplicity. The continuity of attention brings contentment, as I think Philip said, or brings the purring. It's kind of a peculiar aspect of the mind, that the mind that's kind of absorbed or wrapped or engaged fully in something begins to purr. And now purring is piti and sukha, is the joy and the happiness that begin happening. A sense of lightness, a sense of well-being, a sense of delight, a sense of some joy or happiness of different kinds that begin arising. And those are kind of encouragements, it's part of the encouragement to say, oh yeah, stay on track, it's good to be here, right here, it feels so good just to be here. It's very healing. There's so much suffering that we carry with us. And to do this work, to do the risky work, the courageous work of really being present for experience and being willing to kind of enter into some of these realms of samadhi, gives access to amazing healing capacities of integration, of softening, of opening, of reconciliation of all kinds, of various kinds. And then so there's the fifth kind of quality that comes into play as we get into more samadhi is sometimes called one-pointedness. Not sure that's the best translation of the ekagata, but it's a state shift. At some point with samadhi, there's a state shift where we actually feel a change of state. That when it happens, I think of it as a gift. I think of samadhi, that kind of level of state shift in samadhi, as being all samadhi as being a pure gift, kind of act of grace, and I just feel so fortunate when it comes into play. And so there's a state shift. Some people describe as being now really locked in, like just really like now. Or just like rooted. Now we're really rooted in the present moment, or rooted in whatever we're focusing on. So the tendency to wander off, just not really not there. I like the idea of being rooted, like whomp, here I am, now I'm here. And any movement towards distraction, to be involved in anything else, either doesn't happen, or if any tendency towards it, it feels like you suddenly you're going uphill, like there's a steep, like you're in the bottom of a big bowl, and the place of rest is at the bottom of the bowl, and the sides of the bowl. It's a lot of work to climb up the slippery sides. So why would you? So you try and you slip right back. You know, you're kind of rooted in this place. And then from there, it's kind of like you're entered into a new state, samadhi state, that then is very supportive for developing fuller samadhi, a deeper samadhi. It's very, it can move towards deeper and deeper states of equanimity. And in fact, at this level of the liberated pendular rising, where they talk about concentration, the implication or the idea is that this is developing samadhi to the level of very deep equanimity, where there's kind of a deep, this being rooted and being here and really settled is so strong and so content and so safe that the mind doesn't really react to anything that goes on. It doesn't really start, it's not for or against anything, or it's not liking or not like anything. It's here in a peaceful way. The classic image is that of a person coming out of a nice, refreshing, nice bath or plunge in the lake, and really clean, and then being wrapped in a very, very thin, very light, very white, clean, pure sheet that covers their whole body in a comfortable, nice way. Very safe and cozy and nice. And, nothing's really bothering you, kind of protected from the insects, protected from the sun, and you're safe, kind of. So that's the classic image. My image for it is another place where I felt safe and at home growing up when I was really small, was taking a white bed sheet and putting it over a little dining room table. And then, so it came down to the floor, and then crawling underneath, and this beautiful light would come in from, through the white sheet, and It was so, even though it was noisy in the house, it'd be so still and quiet under that table in this little sacred temple, you know. And I was there all cozy and safe. And so this, you know, and everything, you know, all this stuff could happen around, but I was kind of, you know, nothing to do with me. I was my safe place. So this equanimity is a safe place. And that is considered to be one of the great foundations for doing vipassana, for having the insights, for seeing things as they are. And to give you a little bit of sense of how this might work, I want to use an analogy again. Some of you heard this before, but I'll use it a little bit differently so that you'll stay interested. So imagine that you're out for a nice day off walk in someplace that feels very comfortable and nice, safe for you, and maybe out in the oak woodland hills, maybe. And you come, you know, you come to a river, and it's a nice oak tree, and sit down and lean against the oak tree, and you've had a nice hike, you're a little bit tired, so you take a nice nap, and you wake up from a nap totally refreshed, and you're a little hungry, so you have your little lunch you had with you, and you're totally satisfied, and you're just sitting there now content and happy, nowhere to go, nothing to do, nothing to be. And so you're sitting there watching the river go by. And as the river as you're watching, you see this big, you know, Mississippi showboat coming down the river with lights blaring and music and orchestra and band and dancers of all kinds and slot machines and, you know, all kinds of allures. And the next thing you know, you're on the showboat. But then, you know, that took, you know, a few months to realize you were gotten on the boat. And that you're no longer on your safe, content place on the river. So you figure out how to get off the boat, and you make your way back up the river, find your oak tree, and you sit there again. And then you're content and happy, but then you're looking, coming down the river is a war boat. And they're fighting the good cause. All guns blaring. And so the next thing you know, you're on the boat. It takes a few years to realize you're on that one. But finally you're wait a minute, I don't even know what they're fighting about. So you get off. Takes a while to get back to your oak tree, and finally, it feels so good to be there. It's like, you know, it's a long time to get back, but that was like, oh, finally. You're so happy to be back. It's like so much contentment and happiness and delight. I'm back here. This is the place. But coming down the river is this poor, rickety, barely floating raft, just like decrepit or just, you know, almost sinking. Like you feel so sorry for it. Oh, you know, it's like miserable looking little raft. Oh, it's so hard. Oh, it must be hard to be a raft like that. And then you get on, the next thing you know, you're on that. It takes a few years to get off that one. It didn't sink quite fast enough. And so then you get off and you make your way back up. Finally, you're sitting there in the tree and relaxed, comfortable, focused. You're really interested in just being there. You're interested in just that spot, interested in the sense of well-being and contentment and the clarity of seeing that's there. You're interested in your well-being and what it feels like to be at home in this world and not caught and attached and pulled into what goes on around you, but to feel that there's real wisdom and compassion and a deep sense of connectedness, sense of belonging, sense of that's here, sitting under the oak tree, just looking at the river going by. And then, sure enough, there's a boat coming down. And you look at that boat. It arises, it moves, and it passes by. And another boat comes. It rises, it goes by, and it passes. And then more boats come. And after a while, you say, oh, these boats, they come and go. And you look upriver, and you see, like, wow, I can see, take your binoculars and look up the river, and you see, there's like this massive, massive factory up there. All it's doing is making boats. There'll never be, if I get on every boat, there's never any end to it. So after a while, you start seeing these boats are impermanent. They're constructed. They're there for causes and conditions. They're not necessarily personally related to you. They're just phenomena that are passing by. They arise and they pass. They come and they go. And start appreciating that from the place of being on the stable riverbank, on solid ground, at ease, resting, content, in a samadhi state, or happy, or with strong confidence and faith, with interest in what's possible in the human heart and mind, by staying rooted here in this present moment, with equanimity, with non-reactivity, with not being pulled for and against experience, it's possible to discover something that's very important that very few people discover because they don't take the time it takes to settle and be. And one of the things we can start seeing, something very powerful about the arising and passing of phenomena, the impermanence of experience. And that's a very important insight, which is the topic for tomorrow. But it's not something you have to believe, but it's something that when you're prepared, when the preparations are done, it will be revealed. When you've done your work and entered the temple, entered the sacred, you know, riverbank, it'll be revealed to you that in fact, all this stuff comes and goes, and there's a whole different new way of relating to that life. And perhaps it's a way that brings a lot more wisdom, a lot more compassion in how we engage in the world of things arise, that things, this impermanent world that we live in. And hopefully, and I've kind of staked my adult life on this, that doing this deep work and really arriving here, being interested in here, discovering this samadhi, this settledness, this happiness, this contentment, deep work, equanimity of just being here, transforms us into people who are peacemakers in this world. People who can step back into the world with compassion and care for the world in an important way. It's not an escape, but again, it's a preparation, sacred preparation for the sacred work of caring for each other in this world that we live in. So my hope in giving this talk and with the examples and analogies I gave is that maybe you can find your own personal way of connecting to this topic of samadhi. Maybe you have your own experiences of being under the table or something that gives you a sense of the possibility. You have your own sense of a kind of sense of wholeness or healing or connectedness, settledness, well-being of being here that can open you to the possibility of entering this present moment more fully. Really being here, so that all that other things that are not needed right now can just kind of wash off your hull as you head your boat to the safe harbor. And we can start now.